From the Lend Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of May, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing. We'll hear about the weather forecast from Don Day at Day Weather. Dan O'Brien from Kansas State University will join us to discuss the agricultural energies, and I'll bring you up to speed on the ag news for the afternoon on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $4.59.5 unchanged. December at $4.46.5 down 4.25. July soybeans 2.25 higher. It finished at $10.62.5 and the settlement price for the November futures at $10.50.75 up 0.25 cents. Bean meal a dime higher. Bean oil 22 cents higher. Wheat futures soft red down 14 for the day. It settled at $5.28.5 and the hard red July at $5.24.5 down 14.25 cents. Naomi Bloom now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com on this first trading day of the week. It's a Tuesday, of course, Naomi. I hope your Memorial Day weekend went well.
Yes, just a nice, relaxing weekend at home with family.
Excellent. Me too. However, I guess relaxing, maybe not. I did make a trip to St. Louis and went through some of the devastated areas. My gosh, what an awful tornado that was. There are still cars in the street with trees on them, whole homes down, all kinds of stuff. Just awful. Feel so very sorry for them. But let's talk about the marketplace for the day. Kind of a quiet day for the beginning of this trading week, a shortened week. Sometimes those can be a little volatile coming back after Memorial Day weekend. Not this weekend, though, I suppose.
Right, exactly. So very quiet coming into this week. Traders starting to be focused, I think, on the crop progress readings that'll be released later this afternoon. They're looking for corn planted acres to be near 87% planted. Now, that would be up from 78% last week. And for soybeans, they're looking for soybeans to be 77% planted, up from 66% last week. But the question will be, you know, how much actually did get planted, with rain occurring in many places throughout the Midwest off and on throughout the week, along with cold weather conditions. So I'm curious what the numbers will be today, and we will get a first glimpse of the corn rating as far as what the good to excellent category will be. Traders think it's going to be amazing at 73% good to excellent. So we'll see what the USDA has to say about that as well. Markets just marking time today, with corn trading steady to a few cents lower, beans trading mixed. Wheat, though, down about 14 cents on better chances for weather in parts of Europe, and that weighed on the wheat market today.
We will have the state statisticians from Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana on tomorrow. That will be the last time, actually, that we get to talk with them for their state reports, because USDA has made a decision that those reports, at least the audio side of them, will no longer be made available starting on Friday. I will miss them because they've been in place in part because of WILL AM 580 since 1991. A lot of history in those. So I am not looking forward to losing those, but we'll make sure that we have the state reports. The paper copies will still be available from the state. So we'll be able to stay up to speed on states and some of the individual things that you see in those state reports that are not in the national reports. Now, I do have to ask Naomi about wheat futures. They were off 13, 14 cents for the day. I'm supposing that put some pressure in the back and the new crop corn months, but why was it? Is it just the rainfall across the hard red winter wheat growing regions and maybe spring wheat planting rate that managed to push that market lower today?
Yeah, definitely a part of it. Also some technical selling. If you look at daily charts and if you watch the moving averages, Chicago July wheat went below the 40-day moving average, which was up near 542 at the opening price. Once it went below that, just more sell stops got triggered, taking prices down to the next area of moving averages near 534 and 532. And just the market was unable to find any strength. So the technical selling took over. Prices, though, should have some pretty good support at the 525 area on the July contract. And then we'll see what crop progress ratings are this afternoon, because we'll find out, of course, about spring wheat planted acres and spring wheat conditions for the crop and winter wheat conditions for the crop. And we'll be keeping an eye, of course, on the rainy weather that has occurred in portions of Illinois. There's always concerns of disease that could emerge because of too much rain. Same with Kansas.
Yeah, so we'll watch all of those. That's the other thing, is that while that did rain in some of those hard red winter wheat regions in Kansas, and we've had rainfall, of course, in southern parts of Illinois, Indiana, where the soft red winter wheat is grown, a little bit of Missouri as well. Wheat at this time of year can be really hurt by disease. I did talk with the wheat breeder here at the University of Illinois last Friday, asked up this question because they last week on Tuesday were out and found a record crop in the state of Illinois. But a record crop can go downhill really quickly, as she reminded me. Anything else you're watching in the marketplace, whether it's in the grains or the livestock?
Yeah, looking over at the livestock sector, there was some very volatile price action earlier in the day, with feeder cattle futures trading nearly $7 lower, live cattle down about $4 or $5 at one point on rumors of screwworm finding its way into Missouri. Now, the USDA shut down that rumor pretty quick, but it was enough to trigger some selling in the marketplace. And then with the cattle on feed report from Friday, pretty neutral as it came out as expected. So traders now will be watching where demand is this week in the form of box beef values, and we'll be keeping an eye on cash sales as we are now past one major holiday grilling season in the United States, with Father's Day up next. We'll see where the demand is for all of those beef products.
Yeah, we have Memorial Day, Father's Day, Juneteenth, and July 4th all coming up within a 30-day period. It's a fast and kind of furious 30, well, a bit more than 30 days, but it's a fast and early start to the summer grilling month. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Well, we'll keep an eye out with outside market news this week. We get GDP information. We also get the minutes from the Fed meeting. And we're going to be watching to see how fund traders square up their positions as the end of the month of May comes up here. And they'll start, of course, a new month next week for their trading needs as well. So keep an eye on those outside markets. They might have as much importance on grain prices as actual grain market fundamentals, such as weather and weekly export sales.
Naomi Bloom is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. In today's agricultural news, the chair of the House Ag Committee says the Trump tax bill, now headed to the Senate, will finally shore up the farm safety net. While most of last week's House debate on the president's one big beautiful bill focused on SNAP and Medicaid, G.T. Thompson, the chair of the House Committee, highlighted the bill's improved farm safety net functions.
The one big beautiful bill makes permanent and expands the Trump tax cuts. It also prevents the death tax from hitting over 2 million family farms. It locks in the small business deduction, helping 98% of American farms stay afloat.
And there are other farm-related tax breaks, he says.
It expands immediate expensing so farmers can expense the tools that they use today to secure the harvest of tomorrow. It protects domestic biofuels from being crowded out by Chinese imports. It lowers the cost of borrowing for our farmers hit by Biden's sky-high interest. It reduces regulatory burdens on small farmers hiring seasonal workers.
Thompson said the bill secures the farm safety net and delivers accountability to SNAP by shifting some costs to the states, especially those with high payment error rates. But the bill could face changes to SNAP and Medicaid reforms in the Senate, where the GOP budget hawks and moderate Republicans will also fight each other for concessions. Those changes could complicate final passage when the bill returns to the House. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C., farm groups continue to react to the MAHA Commission report on the heels of the Thursday report released by the Make America Healthy Again Commission, part of the Trump administration. Industry organizations are calling for science-based agricultural policy. In a statement, the Modern Ag Alliance said the report raises the possibility that the federal government could take a position to restrict farmers' access to crop protection tools, undermining existing science science-based frameworks and ultimately jeopardizing the affordability and security of the U.S. food supply. Crop protection tools are not only safe, they say, they are essential to food security, affordability, and the survival of family farms across the country. Losing access to these critical inputs would be devastating to American agriculture. And finally today, we'll turn to Iowa, where ethanol advocates are urging Governor Kim Reynolds there to veto a bill restricting carbon sequestration pipelines. The advocates said in a press conference Thursday the bill is extremely problematic to biofuels. The bill, which passed the Iowa Senate May 12, is awaiting a signature from Reynolds, would change the definition of a common carrier and increase insurance requirements for pipelines transporting liquid carbon dioxide. It would also set requirements for the Iowa Utilities Commission and expand who can intervene on dockets with the commission. Advocates and lawmakers in favor of the bill oppose the use of eminent domain for the Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline, which would transport captured carbon dioxide from ethanol facilities in Iowa and neighboring states to underground storage in North Dakota. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's take a look at the agricultural energies for the day on this Tuesday. Dan O'Brien joins us. He's with Kansas State University Extension. Hello, Dan. Thank you for being with us. What's the profitability in the ethanol industry been like over the last month?
Well, in May, we've seen a little bit of a turn towards a more positive outlook. Not much, but an estimate of about 3 cents a gallon profit. Again, using the kind of an Iowa-centric based model with the latest numbers for the first 3 weeks of the month. So we've got a break-even cost of about $1.61 ethanol price, $1.64, but you've got DDG prices about $145 per ton, corn oil prices of about 53 cents. So both the DDG and the corn oil numbers are up. Of course, the key issue with ethanol profitability is the corn input price, and a price of about $4.49 here in May. In April, it had been about $4.63. So again, you drop by about 14, 15 cents the cost of corn and have some moderate improvement in ethanol, DDG, and corn oil prices, and you end up with some profitability that's following a time frame from basically November of 24 through April, where we lost anywhere from 1 cent up to 11 or 12. The worst profitability time frames, worst months for profitability came in November, December, January, right in the key post-harvest time frame for corn, and it just weren't seeing a lot positive going on. So got that happening. Of course, we're watching corn ethanol, we're part watching the ethanol inventories and trying to see how both feed grain based ethanol production and stocks are coordinating with what we think will probably be a decent time of fuel demand coming up this summer, and kind of an up and down situation. It's kind of surprising, really, that the corn ethanol production figures or U.S. ethanol production figures had dropped down here of late, but yet, for some reason, last week or so, well, for some supply demand factors, we haven't seen a major drop off yet in the inventory. So, you know, since the ethanol industry operates on the margins, when you see inventories creeping up, it always is a source of concern, given that it could be the step in an inventory building phase, which would really drop prices. So overall, a little bit better picture so far, and we are coming into driving season. And if the economy holds up, fuel demand continues to click along, then that would bode well for the profitability of the ethanol industry.
Yeah, the Memorial Day weekend was supposed to be one of the largest driving weekends that we've had in a very long time, maybe a record if I remember correctly, mostly pushed along by lower prices of gasoline at the pump. Now, you and I might have looked at the price and thought, I don't know. I remember much lower prices. However, I was talking to my daughter, and from the time she's been 16, she thinks this price is cheap.
Yeah, that's right. Frame of reference.
Yeah, frame of reference is different. So it dawned on me, I was like, well, if she thinks it's cheap, she and, you know, and those late 20, 30-year-olds are really going to think, I can drive this summer and take off, and they're in prime family vacation time. So we'll see how all of that goes. 45Z, I know that you, Frayne Olson, and one of his colleagues in North Dakota at NDSU had a discussion about this last week. What did you learn?
Well, Dave Ripplinger has been the person that's really been on top of that. And of course, the 45Z credit extension has been delayed. There was originally intended to come in January. We got all tied up with presidential administration transition issues. So that extension holds the possibility of being very helpful to the biofuels industry, especially on the especially with regard to renewable diesel, biodiesel factors. So anyway, I guess just to remind people, the bill. It's a tax. It comes in on the heels of what had been a tax credit that had been helping the biodiesel industry, that went away in at the end of 2024. So coming into this year, we've been waiting for that to happen. Hasn't happened yet. We have seen a lot of some real concern in that industry. In fact, in news here in the last, here in May, of a plant in Iowa owned by Chevron had been bought from an REG group, which is one of the leading groups, anticipating, again, strong biodiesel demand off in the future. Well, that they because of this uncertainty with 45Z, it's a final approval, they've laid off employees. Maybe that's temporary, don't know, but you got that happening, and so we'll see. But there's promise that tax bill will go forward. It does sound like that. I think it's been if I'm getting my signals right, I think it's been approved by the House. Has to go now into the Senate, and we'll see how 45Z and as a set of regulations affecting the bioenergy industry will survive there. But so generally a positive outlook going forward, but again, it has to wind its way through the legislative processes to as part of that large tax bill and survive any reconciliation, which there no doubt will be, and come out the other end and be able to benefit the industry. But regardless, I think we're seeing signals that this delay has caused uncertainty in the biodiesel industry for sure. And, again, it's affecting the risk attitude and the financial viability under risk of some of these plants that are out there. So if you're in the biodiesel industry, 45Z's approval can't come soon enough and in order to help solidify business plans and keep that industry moving forward.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. That's Dan O'Brien from Kansas State University. Joined us on the Tuesday edition here of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Medium. Do visit our website. The address there is willag.org. There you'll find our daily program to listen to directly from the website. Just click and play or search it out in your favorite podcast applications. Actually, there's a podcast tab at willag.org as well. And under that tab, you'll find the Closing Market Report Commodity Week and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Each has a way to subscribe and or share your favorite podcast from Illinois Public Media. Let's check in on the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Don. Thanks for being with us. How was the weekend weather where you are?
Well, pretty cool and pretty wet. We had a little bit of snow in the high country, but more importantly, we did see some really beneficial rains across some of the drought areas of the Western High Plains. If you were to look at the drought monitor and see the islands of drought conditions over portions of the western high plains and Rockies, parts of Nebraska, parts of Wyoming, South Dakota, and into some dry areas of the western wheat belt areas, all picked up 1 to 3, some areas over 4 inches of rain, along with some very cool temperatures. So that was great news for those areas. Those areas have been missing out this spring, so it was good to see that moisture.
In that western part of the Corn Belt, how far do they remain behind, and will they be able to alleviate the drought risk at this point, do you suppose?
Well, there's help coming, but there are areas in the Northwest that need another good 3 to 5 inches of rain. If you want to catch up, if you're keeping score. Now, the recent rains have certainly helped, but it's like an elephant. You can only bite out a drought one bite at a time.
The rainfall that you had over the weekend, where is it headed, or did it dissipate?
Well, we have a little upper-level low that is going to end up being very pesky. In the days ahead, it's going to spin up over the northern plains. It's going to be centered over Iowa, portions of Wisconsin, Minnesota, and it's going to meander. It's not really hooking up with the jet stream, at least for next 2 or 3 days. So it's going to be cool. It's going to be wet in those states I just mentioned, with considerable coolness, shower and thunderstorm activity. So that's going to be in the northern and northwest areas of the Corn Belt. Now, it's going to be cool in many other areas, but the heavier rain will be more towards the far eastern Corn Belt and then down towards the Delta.
Now, can I ask one follow-up question about these meandering rainfalls in Wisconsin? Is it an Eau Claire kind of thing, or might that be far enough to the south that Janesville, parts of Illinois, particularly Freeport and Rockford area, where it has been really pretty dry, might they pick up some rain?
They might. This is especially true as we get into Friday and the weekend, or let's say right at the end of the week, because the upper level low will eventually get caught up and will swing through those areas you just mentioned. So there is going to be an opportunity for showers and thunderstorms there. Will it be enough to alleviate the dryness? Maybe, especially between Wednesday and Friday, see those areas getting a chance of rain.
Through the eastern Corn Belt, what happens the rest of this week? And then if you could take a broader look at next week across the Corn Belt for me too, please.
Well, once this upper level low moves out, we are going to see a gradual warming trend. Key word there is gradual, but we do see high pressure nosing into the Corn Belt and Midwest. So we are going to see warmer weather. That is going to be especially true, right? Here we are between Monday and Wednesday of next week is when you're going to notice the warmer weather. When it comes to shower and thunderstorm activity, it's going to be a while. I think once we get into past this weekend, there'll be a break. There's going to be a warm-up. And then the next round of precipitation should come through west to east right around between Wednesday and Friday next week.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.